It's July 2018. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor wrestling. My name is Harley R. Paget. I co-host this show. I co-host the PW Torch VIP podcast, Elite Repeat, where we are rewatching the Being the Elite web series. I'm also a regular contributor to the PW Torch Wednesday livecast, PWT Talks NXT. I'm joined, as always, by Emily Fear.
Hi, Harley. Hi, everyone. I'm Emily Fear. I co-host this podcast along with Elite Repeat with Harley and Tempest, an aspiring training wrestler out of Florida, where we cover the ascent of the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega as being the Elite. But yeah, it is a hot weekday following what was an exciting weekend and some interesting turns of events.
Yes, we're recording this at 10:30 at night, and still I'm melting here in the studio, here at Alpha Base.
Yeah, things aren't going so well over here at Omega Base. So it is in the upper 90s today, and the humidity was supposed to break, and it hasn't quite. So, yep, doing our best to stay alive.
Yeah, today it was a high of 41 here. So if you're listening in Canada, you know how hot it was for me. If you listen in America, you know how hot it was for Emily. And we have no idea what those numbers mean to each other.
I think it roughly translates. Yours roughly translates to the same as the 90s, the 90s degree Fahrenheit.
Yeah, I think it felt like 108 or something Fahrenheit here today.
Oh, Jesus.
At the peak of the afternoon.
Okay, we didn't have it that bad. Oh, yeah. Oof.
But anyway, so let's get into this week in Ring of Honor. On this show, we usually spend a lot of time talking about what happened on the weekly television or what happened on the live events. Oh, I guess we should say, if you are a Pro Wrestling Torch VIP subscriber, we have a roundtable podcast. A bonus episode of Talking Honor is up online right now. Myself, Emily, and a woman named Angela, who is in attendance at Best in the World. We sat down, we talked about everything from Best in the World. We recorded that conversation, and if you're a VIP member, you can listen to it right now. If you're not a Torch VIP member, head over to ProWrestlingTorch.com and maybe look around, maybe consider it. See, Wade and the website will do a much better job of explaining everything that being VIP entails. But at the very least, it'll get you this podcast, and it'll get you Elite Repeat, our other podcast, along with many, many others. So that's that. Now, here's the thing. Very interesting development. Friday night, Best in the World, live from Baltimore, Maryland, Dalton Castle retains the world title in a triple threat over Cody and Marty Scurll. The next night, in Fairfax, Virginia, it's a TV taping, and ROH often does this. The night after the television, they get together the next night in the arena, and they tape, how many weeks? 3 weeks? 4 weeks, Emily? You attended a TV taping recently.
Usually, I think it's 4 weeks.
There you go. One evening, and the live crowd gets to watch a full month's worth of television, 4 hours of television matches taped in one sitting. So, for instance, the matches that we watched on this week's television, Matt Taven, Ultimo Guerrero, Kenny King, Jonathan Gresham, those were taped in New York back on, I want to say, June 2nd, so a month ago. And that's the thing. So, at the Fairfax tapings on Saturday night, the main event of those tapings was a four-corner survival match for the ROH world title, Dalton Castle, Cody, Matt Taven, and Jay Lethal. And this match will be airing in its entirety on television. I mean, at this rate, sometime in August, I guess, because they seem to be taping at least a month in advance. Now, the decision was made kind of last minute. I was out Saturday night. So I got home at like 2 a.m. and I'm going on Twitter and seeing people talking about this. And I had no idea this was happening.
Yeah, I was in a similar boat. I had went out in the late afternoon and come back around like 9:30, quarter to 10 p.m. And we, by happenstance, saw something on YouTube that we watched that was like the setup for the match. So like the promo that basically that they had done where all three guys were in the ring and Dalton comes out and basically challenges them all at once. And that sets up the match for later in the evening. But I think by the time that we had seen that, that match had already happened. And while you could stream it live on Honor Club as it happened, afterwards there was a bit of a delay, so that it wasn't available until the next morning. And that's when we were able to actually watch the match.
Okay. See, I didn't even see that promo. I mean, we follow our way, so we didn't really... You and I don't need that setup necessarily. We know Cody is a deserving number one contender. He was involved in the finish Friday night, wasn't pinned, wasn't submitted. Matt Taven's supposed to get a world title shot at a live event a month or two ago. That didn't happen due to Castle's injuries. Jay Lethal, off on his road to redemption, just beat Kushida, beat Punishment Martinez, beat Matt Taven and all these other people. So the contenders for this match make sense. But yeah, I don't remember the match even being announced ahead of time. It's not like at Best in the World they said, oh, tomorrow night we're going to be doing a world title match at the tapings. They certainly did not announce we're going to be live streaming this main event. So I'm guessing it was a last minute decision probably from management, with the idea being it's 2018 and the results are going to get out regardless, right? So if ROH doesn't live stream this and a title change occurs, we're going to find out. You and I, even if you and I try our best not to read spoilers, not to hear anything, something's going to slip up. And that happened to me. Before I got a chance to watch the match, somebody on my Twitter posted about the results. And so I knew who won the match before I actually got to sit down and watch the match. That seems to be where we are these days. You can't escape these things.
Yes, if you want to avoid spoilers, I tell this to everybody. If you want to avoid spoilers, you have to stay off the internet. That's the only way to do it. And the trick with this one, though, was by the time a lot of people figured out that this was happening and that you could watch this via Honor Club as it happened, there a lot of people had missed that opportunity to actually see it. We're coming in late, so I was going on Twitter and getting spoilers for something that I didn't even know had happened. It's one thing to be like, oh, I haven't gotten to watch Best in the World yet. I'm going to, you know, stay off of Twitter for the next 12 hours. But it's another thing to be like, I didn't know that there was this match going on. And I didn't want to see any of that.
Yeah, that's the thing. So it wound up, despite ROH's best efforts, it still wound up spoiled for us.
Yeah.
But spoiled for us, you know, a couple hours or half a day beforehand, as opposed to, you know, this presumably isn't going to air on regular television until next month sometime, maybe the end of this month, but even I'm guessing sometime in early August. So, you know, there's no way we would have been able to go from this weekend to next August without finding out about these results. Something would have come out at some point.
Oh, so
I get it. Yeah, I get ROH wanted to get out ahead of it and wanted to control it. Rather than having people go to the news sites and read about the title change, they could go to ROHwrestling.com and watch it themselves. That makes sense. And I would like to think that that would influence your opinion as well. You know, you might sit... I guess we're... Okay, so now I haven't actually... I don't know. What do we do here, Emily? Because I haven't actually addressed... I haven't acknowledged the winner of this match yet. Because I've been kind of hesitant. I feel like if I say the name right now, I'm spoiling things for people.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. If you are listening to this podcast and you have not been spoiled by the events that had happened that unfolded on Saturday night,
hit June pause, go 30th, watch it, come back.
Yes, hit pause, go watch it. I believe last time I saw it was actually on YouTube now, so it's not even Honor Club specific. I believe that they're making it available for every... It's just been made available at this point. If you're not spoiled yet, turn off the podcast, hit pause, and go watch the match. If you don't want to watch the match, then you're going to get spoiled, because I would say just flash ahead 5 minutes or whatever, but we're probably going to end up referencing this again, and you're going to find out sooner rather than later.
And we can't say, you know, jump ahead 5 minutes on this podcast because no one asked. We're going to be talking about this for half an hour.
This is probably a little bit more pressing of conversation than what happened in this week's TV taping or this week's, you know, TV episode. Not that this week's TV episode doesn't merit conversation, but, you know, this is a huge, this is a big happening
moment. First time we had a title change on Honor Club, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Dalton's been champion. Well, the world title. First time the world title has changed hands in 2018. So,
yes.
Big deal. And yes, okay, so you've gone and watched it. You're back now and you're ready. And we can officially, yes, we can officially discuss the fact that Bernard the Business Bear is the new ROH world champion. Shocking.
Shocking.
Did not see that coming.
Who knew?
Last minute replacement.
You know, yeah.
One can dream.
Yes. So, whereas we were living in a idyllic fantasy land after Friday night, on Saturday night, we returned to Earth, although not an unpleasant version of it, and we returned to our new world champion, who is Jay Lethal.
Yes, and that's a lot to unpack and a lot to discuss there for sure, because going into Best in the World, I'd say the majority of the internet, the majority of ROH fans, I don't know if I had the exact numbers, I'm guessing people were split, maybe like 50% of people, maybe even 60% said were thinking Cody was getting the title, 25% Marty, and maybe 15% Dalton. Like I feel like most people thought Cody's walking out of the with the title this weekend.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And it winds up being none of those three.
Yeah, it's not Dalton. Dalton doesn't get to continue being the champ, and Bullet Club still doesn't have that world champion.
Yes. So we'll talk about the match itself. We should talk about the match first before we talk about why Jay Lethal is a champion and what we make of Jay Lethal being champion. The match itself, Four Corner Survival, I like this a lot better than the Best in the World main event.
I'm with you. I enjoyed it more than the Best in the World main event as well. I don't know what it is about a four versus a three, but I actually always end up enjoying a like fatal four way more than I do a three way match. Maybe because you do get a great combination of like two, you end up getting kind of like six man energy from it. You get tag matchups, you end up getting a lot of like two on twos, some like two people fighting off ring,
yes,
two people fighting
in ring.
It's even
numbers so people can pair off.
Exactly. There's a lot of energy that comes from it in a similar way that like a really effective six man.
And this match definitely was able to breathe. We talked about on the last episode about how the Best in the World main event felt like they'd run out of time for the show and they had to really condense it in. This wasn't the case. I think this video was like 26 minutes long, and only part of that was the introductions and, you know, the entrances. The match was probably a good 15 to 20 minutes, I'd say.
Yeah, I would say that it was around there, and especially for like what is essentially going to be a TV match, it's, you know, a fairly long one.
Yeah, there's still shenanigans. We got Brandy, we got Bernard, the ref gets pulled out of the ring at one point. Matt Taven has a roll-up on Dalton, and it looks like he should have had the match won, but the referee was checking on Lethal because he thought Lethal was injured. You had Bernard the Business Bear taken out by a suicide dive from Jay Lethal. You had Brandy slapping Matt Taven. You had a Tower of Doom through a table in the ring. So lots of shenanigans. But unlike my complaint about Best in the World, I thought all this worked. I think
yes.
In part because it was balanced better.
Yes, that was my big note from it, is that whereas we were talking about the shenanigans in the Best in the World match kind of being like one per every minute of match,
yeah.
where like, you know, any given moment you weren't really sure where to look, and so the flow of the match was really broken up by the fact that there was always something else going on off ring that like was interfering of some sort. This one had a balance to it. This one had like some interference, but it didn't mess with the pacing of the match, which I think also goes back to the fact that there were four guys in the ring as opposed to three.
And a lot of great wrestling.
A lot of great wrestling.
It wasn't just ref to Bernard to table. It was, those were moments that were spaced out throughout.
Yes. Yes. And this is going to be a weird episode where I talk about Matt Taven in positive terms, but it's because whenever he wrestles without his goons, I'm always much more impressed.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
And, we'll come back to Taven as well, because he was in the main event of this week's television.
Exactly. Also, well, slightly Sam's so,
goons. Yeah, where we go with Matt Taven from here, definitely, because there was that moment in the match where the commentators were saying he has the match won. The referee, he had Dalton pinned for like an 8 count before the referee turned around.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, in the other guy's defenses, and our boss, Wade Keller, pointed this out in his, he did a written report of this match, and he himself said, it's not really that fair to say, because maybe, you know, if Dalton could hear the referee slapping the mat, he would have kicked out. He would have exerted that energy knowing there's a pin happening versus if there isn't. So it's not fair to say, oh, Dalton, Taven had the match won right there, for sure. But he had a visual pinfall, and he wasn't involved in the finish. That's the other thing I really liked about this. Lethal pinned the champ.
Yeah.
Lethal injection on Castle. Pin the champion clean. No, there's no gray area. It's not he got a pin on Taven. Dalton didn't really lose. And again, Lethal's road to redemption. Dalton Castle beat Jay Lethal at the 16th anniversary in February. Mm-hmm. And Jay Lethal got that win back when it mattered the most.
Yeah. So this road to redemption storyline started in late April. This storyline has actually wrapped up, or at least culminated in a very big way, fairly quickly in my mind. I don't know if it seems that quickly to you, but like, it's just the very beginning of July, very end of June. This started maybe end of April, early May. So this to me is really interesting that like Jay has already gone through his road and he's now beat the champ, and now he is the champ, all within the span of 2 months.
Yeah, and it kind of raises the question of, well, now what? Right? We saw him beat Dalton Castle. We've seen him beat Punishment Martinez and Chucky T and Jonathan Gresham and a lot of the bigger names in ROH recently, like in the span of 2 months, like you said. So, now what?
Yeah.
And, I mean, Matt Taven would be a credible first challenger, or a logical first challenger, I guess. He was supposed to get a singles match for the title a month or two ago. Didn't happen. Kingdom conspiracy. Now he's in this match, and it looks like he got the match won. Referee wasn't there to see it. Kingdom conspiracy. So, yeah, Taven Lethal. I mean, I'm sure they've had singles matches before. Yeah, definitely I want to say on television in December, I think, Taven got a big victory over Jay, but it's not a feud that's been hammered into the ground where if they go back to that well right now, we're gonna be like, oh my god, this again. Like, I'd be excited to see that.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I for just as you pointed out, for all manner of purposes, Taven will have the rights to do so. He did not get his title shot like he was supposed to get, and like he was supposed to actually get when it was still Castle. So he will be number one in line, or at least insist that he is number one in line. As much as I'm going to say some positive things about Matt Taven as a wrestler and Matt Taven as, like, you know, the character in ROH. One annoying thing that this sets up is the inevitable, like, you know, promos where Matt Taven whines again about conspiracies, etc. But, you know, he's got kind of a point in, at this juncture where, you know, he is deserving of a singles matchup.
Yeah, and I would find it so refreshing if the main event scene was big heroic babyface Jay Lethal versus smarmy, unlikable heel Matt Taven. It feels like it's been a while since we've had, like, a hero and a villain feuding for the title in the main event. Because Cody is so... I love Cody as a performer. He's so good, but they've made this decision with his character to just constantly go back and forth where he's a babyface 1 minute and 5 minutes later he's the heel. And, you know, I really feel like it's just... It's one of the reasons I didn't like Bullet Club for so long. Like, in all of when Adam Cole was in Bullet Club, when it was Cole and the Bucks, I hated them because they were supposed to be the heels, but they played to the fans and they tried to get cheered. And I just felt like this is undercutting everything.
Yeah, it is the problem with Bullet Club, and there's the state of them being so over in ROH that, like, even if you're supposed to be playing a heel like Cody is and like Marty is, honestly,
that's the thing. At this point, I don't know if they are
credible to make you a credible heel. So, yeah, and I think that actually goes back to your comment about there not being a good, like, title holder versus heel, like a good, like, face title champion versus heel matchup. I think that that was supposed to be Super Card of Honor and Dalton Castle versus Marty Scurll. But the problem is that Scurll is so over that he can't stay completely heel. You know, he does all the heel moves and shenanigans to keep himself in that, like, villain persona. But the sad truth is he's too popular, that people love him too much. He has too much innate charisma in a positive direction to, like, actually gain, like, legitimate heat in front of an ROH crowd. So it'll be fun to see Lethal go up against Taven, because we will actually get someone who has credible heat.
Yeah, and we could definitely have, like, a longer discussion on another episode about, you know, what to do in those situations, because, yeah, do you just go with it? You say the fans want to cheer Scurll, we let them, and we'll find somebody else to be, like, that heel in that position. Do you try to get someone like Scurll to get the fans to turn on him? Would that even work? I mean, I thought the Briscoes have been doing some of the best heel work in the company in the past couple of months, and they got cheered like crazy in Baltimore, and that I found that really disappointing. The commentators tried to cover for it by saying Baltimore's near Sandy Fork and, you know, they've got hometown support. But it just always disappoints me when I'm like, these guys are doing great, like, villain work, and the fans are like, yeah, we love you, instead of being like, boo, you suck, which is what they deserve.
Yeah, and on the case of the Briscoes, like, these guys are doing everything in their power to, like, whether it's, I'd like to hope to want it to be kayfabe, all the things that these guys say, like, outside of the ring, like, in social media, etc. I'm sure hoping that it's kayfabe and within characterization of what they're trying to do. Because if you're still, like, a real avid Briscoes fan and you're cheering them like you would a face, that's a problem, because they're not playing a hero. They're not playing someone that is cheered for real. But I think there is also just, like, a contingent of ROH crowd fans who are always going to be cheering the heel.
Yeah, that's definitely a case for sure. I mean... And the Briscoes, I brought up the Briscoes because them and Bully Ray try their hardest to stay heel. Like, they turn on the fans, and if the fans cheer for them, they'll drop the mic and say, shut up, don't cheer for me, sit down, like, I don't want your support, kind of thing. Obviously, Scurll doesn't do that, Cody doesn't do that, I don't know who else comes to mind right now, but, you know, there are a lot of other heels who don't go that far. Briscoes are the exception for sure. They do everything they can to get people to boo them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Lethal as, like, the clear cut, like, no shades of gray. He's a good guy. We like him. We respect him. He's honorable. After the match, he shook Dalton Castle's hand and they had, like, a nice respectful moment between two competitors. We know going forward that Lethal is the kind of guy that we respect. He didn't come, unlike Taven, he didn't come out whining, complaining about getting a title shot. He went to management and said, I'd like to be the champion again. They said, prove to us that, you know, you deserve another shot. And he said, okay. So he created this quest for himself. The road to redemption was his idea. Nobody came to him and said, if you beat all these people, then we'll give you another shot. He said, I need to prove to the world that I'm deserving of a shot. And here's an idea that I have. So Lethal's second reign as world champion now. His first, June 2015, he was the television champion, challenged Jay Briscoe for the world title, and Lethal became he became a dual champion. He had both titles at the same time. Held the world title until August 2016, when he lost it to Adam Cole. So, and that was right around when he lost it to Cole. I mean, Bullet Club USA, as we kind of call them on our other show, formed around March, April 2016, when the Young Bucks recruited Cole and then Adam Page into the group. So in a lot of ways, this almost feels like, and for me at least, you haven't been watching as long, but it feels like a reboot. We're back to that period before Bullet Club dominated every main event, and it felt like everything in ROH revolved around Bullet Club. Lethal is the champion again. This week on TV, no Bullet Club. Just a bunch of other young guys that we don't see too much of very often getting to showcase their personalities and themselves. So I think all of that is making me feel really optimistic about the ROH right now. It's helping with the Bullet Club fatigue.
Yeah, most definitely. I feel a slight weight lifted off my shoulders. And honestly, I would have been super bummed to have gone from the high of Friday night and seeing Castle retain against all odds to seeing him lose the title in this match, you know, that was streaming on Saturday night. But there is some salvage here in the fact that it's Jay Lethal that's taking this title. You're right in saying it feels kind of like a reset. It really does. It feels kind of like we are hitting the refresh button and we're getting to have like the beginning of a new chapter with ROH, that where Bullet Club maybe isn't as the dominant force. I know that's probably wishful thinking, but it's probably just for the moment. But it's nice to see them kind of double down on their interest in highlighting their exclusive talent rather than continually going back to the Bullet Club well over and over again and really highlighting that talent above anyone else. Giving the title to Jay is a nice way to restore faith, to show a restored attention and focus and instill faith in the audience that ROH still cares about its, you know, its franchise, that cares about the real brand carriers, cares about the Jay Lethals and the Dalton Castles, and heck, even like the Matt Tavens and the guys who are in their brand exclusively, the guys who are really part of the ROH legacy. So yeah, that made it easier to swallow. And it doesn't hurt that Jay's a phenomenal wrestler and feels like a living legend, even though, you know, he's only 33 and he's done his time with ROH. So he's been through so many different phases of his career with ROH, not to mention all the other work that he's done outside of ROH, that this always seems fitting to give him that proper due. And it's certainly been long enough that it feels like this was his time to get that shot again. It crept up on me a little faster than I expected, but it feels right.
Yeah, he's super reliable. That's the other thing. He's not, unlike the Bucks and Marty, he's not doing a lot of work in New Japan. He's made appearances there in the past, but he's not there regularly. He's pretty much just an ROH guy, tried and true these days. And he can be counted on to have great main events. We saw, you know, he had some show-stealing matches with Jonathan Gresham at some live events earlier this spring. And, you know, that counts for something for sure. If you can take somebody that Gresham's a good example, not a lot of TV time, not a lot of character work, but if you can take somebody younger like him and really just wow the audience and really just steal the show, that's a testament to how good Jay Lethal is.
Yeah, precisely. I think that it's as much of a testament to the way that he's able to elevate the people around him as it is to his own appearances and his own abilities. He makes every match. I noted this last week when we talked about his match with Chuck E.T. because of how actually kind of odd it was for the fact that it didn't really make Chuck E.T. look that much stronger of a competitor. Because usually with Jay, anyone who gets in the ring with him is going to leave that ring, win or lose, they're going to leave that ring looking like a stronger competitor. I noticed that with the punishment match. I recently went back and rewatched the episode with him and against Punishment Martinez. And Punishment Martinez hit a, like, really turned a corner with that match. I felt like they were trying to do stuff with Punishment, and they had kind of like he was still kind of finding his style. And ever since that match with Jay and then them igniting this feud with Paige, Punishment has been able to show his abilities in ways that we didn't see months and months before. And I feel like Jay has that ability, that transformative ability on the opponents that he, like, that he just leaves on them, that he is able to, like, transcend his own talent and be able to transfer that to other wrestlers. So he's a very fitting champ in that way.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Yeah, so it's very interesting to see where we go from here. And we don't have, not a lot coming up necessarily. We got our weekly television for sure. But in the month of July, we only have one Honor Club event, which is Honor for All, July 20th in Nashville. And then the next live events aren't until mid-August when they return to the UK. So we've got another 6 weeks or so, basically, of just weekly television and one live event. So I'm intrigued to see what happened, how everything unfolds on television and so on, mixed in with that, and see what the new ROH with Jay Lethal as champion looks like. We got to assume it's going to be a while. We're not going to see Dalton for a while now. He needs time to heal up those injuries, because it's not just one thing. He's got, like, if he was a car, they'd be like, yeah, just sell it.
I'm not
fixing the bumper. It's just not worth it.
I mean, it's his hand, it's his back, it's his legs, it seems like it's everything. Who knows? A neck, his shoulders. Like, Dalton clearly needed to be able to take some time off. He clearly needed to be able to get to take some time away from the ring so he could actually heal. And this was about as graceful an exit as they could give him, despite it being this kind of weird, like, this weird fake out almost, in that, like, we saw him retain the title against all odds and then just to lose it the next night. Yes, in a TV taping, and that episode won't air for a while. But, you know, the title has been changed. The title has changed at this point. The public, the vast majority of people who are going to be aware of this are already aware of this and are not going to be waiting for the television episode to air. So that can feel kind of sour, but it also feels like a more graceful exit than, say, if he had lost it to Marty or Cody at Best in the World. He still got to walk away from that pay-per-view as the champ.
And when he returns, it'll be interesting to see where he's positioned and what he's put in. I mean, he took the pinfall here, but when he comes back, he can point out that he was pretty badly hurt going in, and he had to wrestle 5 guys in the span of 2 days. Those are some pretty tough. Silas Young had to wrestle 5 guys in one night, and he lost the TV title to Punishment Martinez as a result.
Well, I think there's a moral to this story, everybody, and that is don't wrestle 5 guys in one night.
Yeah, the ROH guys are good, but not good enough to face 5 other ROH guys.
This is just good life advice. Seriously, everybody out there, you know, if you're really wanting to get ahead in life and, you know, hold on to the power that you have, don't wrestle 5 guys in one night.
Or 2 nights, or even, you know what, don't even do it in 3 nights, just to play it safe.
one guy per night, how about that? Just until you get, like, until you get really good. Maybe 2, if you're really getting, yeah.
Yeah, and that's good advice for all our young listeners who are out there starting to date as well. So, I don't know, do we have anything more to say about new ROH World Champion Jay Lethal?
No, I'm pretty set on that, but I will ask you a question about our non-champions. I will say, what does this do for...
We wanted to talk about the rest of them.
Well, yeah. Well, we've talked about Castle, we've talked about Taven, but of course we should probably talk about Cody.
Yes, and maybe even Marty, because Marty Scurll took the pin again on Friday night, so where he goes from here, I'm very curious. Like you said, he's basically a babyface now. He's treated like a babyface by the fans. So who do they put up against him? I don't know. Paige and Martinez are pretty locked up. It wouldn't make sense to put Marty in there with him. Marty and Silas? Marty and... I don't know. There's not too many heels in ROH. And then Cody. I think Cody is pretty... I think he's going to be focused on Nick Aldis for the rest of this summer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you got to think they're facing off less than 2 months now. And he's not going to beat Kenny Omega for the IWGP title next week because Kenny's too good. So I'd have to imagine with the NWA title shot already booked and confirmed, he's got to focus on that. He can't worry about trying to get another ROH title shot. Worry about that in the fall. For now, beating Nick Aldis, winning the NWA title, that needs to be his focus.
That's fair enough. And him entering. So this was the summer Cody, right? This was supposed to be like the big three. It was supposed to end with him having the ROH world title, the IWGP heavyweight championship, and the NWA heavyweight championship. So
Are you a Seinfeld fan?
Well, sorry?
Are you a Seinfeld fan?
I mean, I know Summer of George, yes.
Yes, there you go. The episode, this was supposed to be the Summer of George, and it ends up with him, like, crippled and, like, having to learn how to re-walk because he hurt his legs. So that's the Summer of Cody for you.
Oh, gosh. Do you think at the end of All In?
September 3rd, he's going to be lying on like, the ringside mats crying while Bernard cradles his head going, this was supposed to be the Summer of Cody.
I really hope, because I'm going to be going to see All in person, I really hope that we're not in for a, like, Cody is crippled end to his match, because that's going to be a bummer.
He's going to slip and fall down the stairs, just like George. But it'll be the ring steps instead of the stairs.
That's why he has Bernard there. Bernard's supposed to catch him.
Yes. Yeah, so I think Lethal and Taven will maybe occupy each other for a little while. Taven seems to be on the up and up. He got a big win over Ultimo Guerrero this week on television as well.
He did, and he looked really good for the most part. I mean, he looked good. I have the same complaints that I'm always going to make when it comes to
TK
Matt
and Vinny.
Matt, yes, Taven's goons.
Yeah, so, you know, as soon as he comes out with TK, but not with Vinny, I go, okay, so Vinny's hiding under the ring. He's going to come out with the balloons to cause a distraction. And bing, bang, boom, that's what happened.
That's what happens.
A little disappointing, but I don't know. What can you do? Taven got the win over a special guest. That's something. Because a lot of times the New Japan guys come in and they pick up the wins.
That is
especially,
true.
Especially in singles matches.
That is true, but this did, and I will give him this. This was a way to use the Kingdom's typical shenanigans as a way to justify Taven's win over Ultimo Guerrero, who is a big CMLL guy. So, you know, yes, Ultimo had to fall to Taven, but they were able to make it so that the win wasn't 100% legitimate because of the interference from Taven's lackeys.
And didn't make Ultimo look stupid in a way that a lot of times things like this will. Sometimes you'll see wrestler X has this other guy in a submission move. Guy's protege or wife or manager jumps up on the apron and so he lets go of the submission move in order to go after the manager. And you're like, why would you do that? He's just looking at you.
Yeah.
This match, I thought Guerrero looked good. They were in the him and Taven were in the ring to start. They ring the bell, TK's hovering around ringside, and Guerrero like ran over to the ropes and threw a kick at him right away. Like, I know what you're going to do. Get the hell out of here. Later on in the match, he grabbed a chair, chased TK off into the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But the second he returned to the ring, TK returned. Same thing. He took out TK. He threw him into the guardrail a couple of times. He returned. So Ultimo did everything he could. He knew what was coming. He's the veteran. He's 46 years old. He knew stuff like this was going to happen, and he tried his best to overcome the odds. He couldn't, because it was 3-1. And once again, the moral of this podcast is numbers, people.
Yes, ultimately, Ultimo Guerrero had to fight two guys throughout this match. Vinny came in towards the very end.
A balloon in the ear.
What a balloon in the ear.
The
deadliest
of all attacks.
I will say, I'm not giving Vinny any credit here, but I'll say that I was like, the balloon moment was pretty well timed. And the sequence worked effectively. Okay, it did. It actually, if this one had not been the 100th time that I've seen this sequence, I would probably have been like, oh, wow. Okay, that was an interesting way to get that finish. Problem is that despite how effective it was within match, it's just more of the same.
Yeah, but that's to be, you know, this wasn't big paper. This episode was arguably filler, you could say. It's in a sense. Not a lot of long-term, you know, Ultimo Guerrero is not going to be back anytime soon. This isn't having long-term consequences to their feud or anything like that. It's a chance to show off some of the people that we don't get to see so much. People that don't get pay-per-view matches, like Jonathan Gresham and Josh Woods and Shane Taylor. And even the dogs.
Yeah, definitely. And I actually think there's two reasons why I was just a little disappointed by the fact that this finish went where Kingdom related finishes tend to go. And that was one, the rest of the episode had been such kind of a fun way to do an episode that was kind of a throwaway because we got to see some pretty great work from guys that we don't get to see on the pay-per-views. The other reason being that, again, I like when I get to see Matt Taven actually wrestle as a solo wrestler. And it's not like in a six-man with TK and Vinny. It's just Matt Taven, because Matt Taven is a good wrestler whose talents are often eclipsed by the shenanigans that are happening within his six-man team. So I would love to have seen a slightly cleaner. I understand, like, that's not his thing. He's a heel. He goes again, a heel. But when Taven actually gets going, like, he's an interesting wrestler to watch, and I enjoy the things that he can do in the ring. It's just you never get to see enough of them because there's always that other distraction. You've got TK running in over and over again. But it was fun to see Ultimo be able to, like, overpower both the guys for a while. The spots that were outside of the ring where, like, he threw Taven into the barricade, and then he threw TK in the barricade, and they threw Taven onto TK.
TK in Taven's lap. And then dropped them both out of a chair.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I love this match. And I didn't think I was going to feel too strongly about it going in. Simply because I felt like, yeah, Ultimo Guerrero is this legend and this veteran. But this match doesn't have any heat going in, per se. And it's not part of a big storyline. And I'm all about the stories. That's me. You know, it's great to see two people have a good wrestling match. But I'm all about the stories. So I didn't think I was going to love this match too much. And I think the fans were kind of feeling the same way to start. But very quickly, this became the loudest that I heard the crowd all night. There was a Lucha Libre chant. There were This Is Awesome chants on more than one occasion. And Ultimo was just, he was showing that you want to see, like, a veteran at work. That was my thing in this match, just watching Ultimo work the crowd. He knew exactly what to do to get them to cheer. When he was chanting... I meant when he was chopping Matt Taven in the corner. He chopped him a couple of times, and then he asked the crowd, one more? And they're like, yeah! And so he chopped him again. He's like, one more? Yeah! And he just kept asking, one more? And they kept saying, yeah! And he chopped him so much that Taven's just like a quivering mess on the floor in the corner. Stuff like that. Like, watching, that's the veterans at work, and I love watching that. These are the guys who, like, know exactly what they're doing, know exactly how to get the crowd engaged.
Yeah, and Taven works really well against a veteran like that, which is why, you know, it'll be fun to see him play up some matches against Lethal coming up, you know, as you know, Lethal has to go up against Taven to defend the title. Like, it's going to be interesting to see Taven play off the energy of somebody who genuinely does have the crowd's backing, a professional who really knows what they're doing and, like, has that, like, just through and through competency. Taven's a good heel in that way. He doesn't actually need TK and Vinny to be a heel. Like, he can sell really well whatever the face is giving him, and he can make it, like, credible, and he can be a guy that you instantly root against. He's really good at that. He has that same inbuilt, like, heel charisma that, like, that Adam Cole has, that, like, just plays that certain version of a heel, whereas a guy you just want to smack for no good reason, but the minute he opens his mouth, he gives you all the reason you need.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Yeah, there's not really anything cool about Matt Taven that makes you want to cheer him in the way that the Bullet Club guys do it. His hair's a little goofy. It always, Pauly Shore for me, the second I see him. especially Pauly Shore and Encino Man. There's that, the walking stick, kind of weird thing.
Yeah.
Like the stick with this purple bandana tied to it, or kerchief to it. Calling people Melvins, like that's like a sick insult or something. And it's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Right? It's very easy to dislike Matt Taven.
Yeah, I mean, his catchphrase, like his slogan is, "I'm Matt Taven." Whenever you're using your own name in your slogan, that's a heel slogan. That's, you know, that was why, you know, that's why there's Adam Cole, baby. There's like if you're using your own name, it's usually because that's a heel tactic. That's your heel slogan. But the funny thing is that Taven does have big fans, and I think he has people who genuinely cheer him, and not just because he, like, those are people who will cheer any heels.
Melvins.
Well, I was sitting next to a woman who was a really big Matt Taven fan at the Pittsburgh show, and I think to her certain taste level, he's an attractive human being. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, the walking stick, the purple coat, the like posturing, it's not just the walking stick either. It's like having like two hands on it when you come out onto the stage. Like, it's all of it. He's good at selling that particular type of preposterous, you know, bloated heel. Against a guy like Guerrero, he makes a lot. It works. It just instantly works. You don't need a lot of story there. There's chemistry just in like the very different styles of being.
Yeah. So he's got this big win here over Ultimo Guerrero. Veteran, legend, big name from CMLL, had a good showing in the four-way to crown the new champion, wasn't involved in the finish. Him and Cody ended up taking each other out through the table. Seems to kind of point towards him being a bigger player going forward, maybe being a permanent part of the main event scene, whereas he's kind of gone back and forth. He was in the main events, but then he came back into sort of the sixth card, more like the tag division. And when we brought up his name on the Best in the World episode, I think I had kind of written him off the main event list because he was a six-man champion. I thought, oh, well, he's involved with the take. You know, Jay Briscoe is a former world champion, but I'm not considering him as a future challenger because he's doing the take thing right now. That's how it works. We got divisions and people. There's some more fluidity in ROH than other companies for sure. But generally, a lot of times, people only go after one title at a time. But I don't know. Now I'm starting to think Matt Taven's going to be in line for a world title shot soon. And that, combined with some other stuff we got in this week's episode, makes me think that the Kingdom's days as six-man champions are coming to an end.
Do you believe that will happen in the Gauntlet?
I think whoever wins this, okay, we got two short little videos, the same video, but they played it twice. Little promo video saying in 2 weeks' time on television, we're getting the first ever six-man tag team. We've complained about this. Trios tag team. It's not six men on tag team. It's three guys. Three guys teaming together, a gauntlet match. Five teams in the match. We know SoCal and Censored are going to be in it. We don't know the other four teams at this point. But Cabana and Riccoboni said there's going to be some of these, you know, first-timers that we saw the Dogs try to recruit Shane Taylor because, obviously, it makes sense, right? Anybody should want to hold the gold. The Dogs, if there's an opportunity for them to be in this match, why wouldn't you take it? Even if it means giving Shane Taylor a poorly written IOU on a piece of Kleenex.
Which, by the way, he did not receive very well.
to Little Willie's credit, he kind of saw that coming. He didn't want to do this. He was against asking Taylor. Rhett Titus was the one who was like, "Nah, we go way back. It'll be fine." And Taylor essentially said, "Come back when you have real money."
Yeah. Well, Little Willie called it, and that just goes to show you that Little Willie is the real brains of the dog's operation.
I guess in this one instance.
This one instance.
So yeah, I don't know. Do you think the dogs are going to end up in the gauntlet after all? Are they going to find somebody else?
I sincerely hope so.
But who? Who could be the third dog?
Josh Woods.
I don't know if he's that desperate yet. I don't know. I'm interested. Yeah, and that's the other thing. I like the mystery of not knowing who's in the gauntlet match. And there aren't a lot of established trios or established factions in ROH right now. So I love the mixed matched teams. It might see, you know, on the one hand, you could say, oh, well, this is just like, this is a bad move because it points out how few teams there are. But again, the commentators on this episode said, everybody has to team together for the first time at some point.
Yes. Right?
The Kingdom, I remember when the Kingdom debuted, and they debuted in the tournament to crown the first six-man titles. Matt Taven came out and confronted his former Kingdom stablemate, Adam Cole, and said, I got a new Kingdom. And he brought out Vinny and TK. And I had no idea who these guys were. And here we are, a year and a half later, and they're the champions, and I know who they are. So, no idea who's going to be in this gauntlet match, but I'm intrigued. And I hope we get more. Like, I like this segment with the dogs and Shane. I'd like to see more of that next week. I'd like to see other teams going around and discussing with each other. Some singles wrestlers getting together and saying, hey, you heard about this gauntlet match? What do you think of we work together and give it a go?
Will this possibly bring back my long-awaited...
Your machine guns?
My machine guns.
Them and Jonathan Gresham in a Search and Destroy reunion?
Come on, ROH, give this to me.
Coast to Coast and Kenny King. They teamed together before against Silas and Boozer Malonis.
That's right.
What about, will Silas, Boozer, and Malonis be in this match?
I could see that. I mean, what, like...
We haven't seen Brian in a while.
We haven't. Silas doesn't have a title right now.
Yeah.
Why not?
So many options for this match. I like it. I like the mystery. Yeah. And we'll find out what happens with that next week. But the gauntlet match is in 2 weeks' time. So we got that to look forward to there. And I don't know if Shane Taylor is going to be in the tournament in the gauntlet or not. He's not teaming with the dogs from the sounds of things. Is he going to team with somebody else? Or is he too focused on Josh Woods and King Mo?
Oh boy, the rivalry that everybody
continues.
That everybody's talking about. That Josh Woods, Shane Taylor rivalry.
One time, 2 months ago, King Mo and got in Shane Taylor's face, and the feud continues.
One time, 2 months ago, ROH happened to be doing a show in very close to where Josh Woods is from, so they gave him a match to win so that he could win in his hometown. But they wanted to make it as credible as possible against Shane Taylor, so they had this guy, King Mo, involved as well.
Yeah, I don't follow MMA, but King Mo is, I guess, he's an established name in MMA fighting.
I mean, his first name is King, so yeah.
I guess that means something. He's not Prince Mo.
Yeah, he's a king.
He's not Squire Mo.
He's a king. Like, is that a hint at some type of authority?
Sure. So, and I want to say he did wrestle in TNA for a while. I should have looked this up before the show. I didn't. But we'll look it up for next week's episode. Or if you're listening, talkingonair@gmail.com, send us all your information on who is King Mo, because we don't really know. But yeah, I want to say he was in TNA for a while there too.
He was. He was in TNA between 2012 and 2015.
There you go. So yeah, he has some wrestling experience. More than some people that we see on wrestling shows.
Sure, but is he gonna have is he gonna come to ROH?
Is he gonna come back?
Yeah.
That's the question. And after that show, after that first appearance at Bound by Honor in West Palm Beach, I would have said no. I thought that was just a one-off, one night thing. I do get the impression that Woods and Mo are actually genuinely friends in real life, and that's why that happened that night. I don't think they just saddled him with Woods. I think that they actually do have like a, they know each other, because Woods has an MMA background as well.
Yes. Yeah, so, no, that I totally bought. I mean, I completely bought that, like, he was in Woods' corner, and honestly, with him having some pro wrestling background, it makes sense to use him if he's going to, you know, be around and he has a connection to Woods, and it would actually be an interesting foil for Shane. It's just, I don't see him coming back anytime soon.
What about in Las Vegas, Nevada for Death Before Dishonor?
Well, that would be really cool. And if they can continue to build anything between Josh Woods and Shane Taylor, that would be a nice payoff.
That's my thought at this time. If there is anything that's going to happen with Mo, the next big pay-per-view is September, Death Before Dishonor. The fact that it's in Vegas, that, again, I don't know anything about MMA, but for some reason in my head, I'm associating mixed martial arts or UFC in Las Vegas. Or just, I don't know. I don't know why I'm doing that. Maybe I'm wrong. I know nothing about MMA, folks. I'm sorry.
I know nothing about MMA other than I have tried to watch a little bit of it and found it just absolutely so boring. And
not enough guys in bear costumes. Hot tags.
Yeah, there's just, you know, there's just a lot of like punches and kicks. I don't know, not kicks. I don't know. Yeah. What do they do?
Wrestling minus all the fun parts of wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I like fighting, but it's just, if that's all it is, there's nothing else to it. I don't know. Someone, a listener, write us why we're wrong. Tell us why MMA is fun.
Yes. And presumably you won't be a CM Punk fan if you're writing with that response.
CM Punk, write to us and tell us why MMA is cool.
Yes, please. So, yeah, my guess, maybe we see Shane and Mo at Death Before Dishonor. If it doesn't happen there, I don't think it's happening. Put it that way.
Okay.
If it does happen there, I'm guessing Josh Woods is in for like a couple of months of being Shane Taylor's punching bag. Which is, if it gets some TV time, that's better than he's at right now. Because right now we're seeing Woods like once a month, if that.
Yeah, but we were just talking about how we hadn't seen him in a while. And now here he is on television fighting. Pick up a win over the Neon Ninja, Pittsburgh's own Facade.
Yes. Yeah, this is our second time seeing Facade as well. We shouldn't discount that. We saw him May 13th, I want to say it was, him, Facade versus Eli Isom in what we thought might be the first top prospect tournament match, but now it looks like the top prospect tournament isn't happening. That time it ended in no contest because Bully Ray came out and beat them both up. But I remember being impressed by Facade that time, and so I was happy to see him again.
Yeah, this was a competent match. It was like nothing incredible, but just the way I felt about seeing him when, because Facade's from Pittsburgh, and
yeah, your hometown,
my hometown, and
you've seen him around. Next time you see some graffiti, you'll be like, oh, I know who did this.
Oh yeah, that's the
look out for his tag.
I won't go into the storied. Storied legends of Pittsburgh graffiti artists, but I can assure you that Facade is not one. But I will say that seeing him at the Pittsburgh TV taping made a lot of sense because he's a local wrestler and they often, you know, use some local talent in like dark matches or in matches like that one, which was, you know, essentially a squash match. So I was glad to see him again, especially, you know, in a venue like the Hammerstein, actually have a match like start to finish, like an actual finish this time. Yeah. And essentially this was just setting up something between Josh Woods and Shane Taylor. But, you know, the match itself was what, like 8 minutes?
Four and a half.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, it was a short one, but Facade got it hit like two or three of his big moves, running the top rope into the drop kick and the step up springboard cannonball, I want to call it, to the outside. And again, the fans reacted well to that. Up until that point, it seemed from my perspective that they were a little indifferent to this match.
Yes.
And at that point, they became Facade fans.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this match had enough energy that it kind of perked the crowd's interest back. And I always kind of wonder like what the crowd buy-in is of a match based off of the amount of streamers that each wrestler gets. And I will I will give you the count. Fassad got 3. Josh Woods got only 1.
Before the match?
Before the match started.
Well, Fassad had a cute girl with him, so...
I mean, cute girls have...
It's a little unbiased.
That's true. But Josh Woods has his cool...
Has a bad haircut and a weird mouth guard.
And wears a weird length of shorts.
Yeah, it's that MMA thing. You just don't get it.
Just don't get it. Someone, write us. Tell us everything we need to know about MMA.
Explain the length of MMA shorts to Emily.
Yeah, why? Is the haircut also part of the uniform? I don't get it.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Prichard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
I don't know. Yeah, but, like, okay. I don't mind. I don't mind Woods.
Yeah. No, but... I mean, so after that we get Josh on mic and so.
Yeah, this is, I don't think I've ever heard him speak before.
I think he spoke some, I think, at that Bound by Honor match with, you know, I think so. I think there was some talking there, but this was probably the most mic time we've really gotten with Josh Woods. And he called out Shane Taylor for that KO strike that we had talked about a couple weeks ago, because I think both of us aren't a huge fan of when a guy just gets knocked down and that's the count out.
Yeah, one move and boom, you're dead.
Yeah. So we had said that we didn't like, we had both pointed out that that was kind of ridiculous, that it's something we don't like, it seemed kind of weak in this match. And this was part of Josh's call out to Shane, saying that, like, you know, he'd taken strikes before, he'd taken lots of bumps before, but something about this was just not right.
Yeah, and then challenged Shane to a match on the spot, and Shane Taylor, being a heel, was like, no, I don't fight for free. And just walked away.
Yeah.
But the one thing, my favorite moment, and you think it's not supposed to be even part of the thing, but I just love Cole Cabana at the end laughing about how many nicknames Shane Taylor has. Because in his one promo, Taylor refers to himself as one. He's like, that's why they call me One Punch Shane. And then 12 seconds later, he's like, Big Money Shane don't fight for free. And Cole's just like, how many nicknames does this guy have?
I guess as many as you need to make that money, to make that living.
So regardless of King Mo's involvement, Taylor and Woods is continuing. That seems evident.
I have another listener question that is not MMA related, but is Shane Taylor related. I did not have a chance to look up this reference, so I'm interested if you know this, Harley, or if anyone listening out there knows this. So Shane did a shout out about to the crowd about their poor treatment of street stars like him. He said, you treat street stars like trash, and he specifically mentioned...
Yeah. No. Another sports reference.
Carmella Anthony.
Yes, I think she's the SmackDown Women's Champion.
Okay.
No, she's not. That's like a basketball player, I think.
Okay, so I don't know the basketball, and I'm sure there'll be someone out there who criticizes.
I assume it's one of those cheap heat things where, you know, you go to the local town and you'd be like, oh, the sports star from this town doesn't play in this town anymore. Doesn't that just really irk you? And the fans are like, boo, don't bring that up. We don't like to think about that.
We have no past.
Yes, I think it was one of those situations.
Got it. Well,
I want to say Carmelo Anthony is a basketball player.
Okay. Well,
he's a football player.
If that's not true, if it is wrestling related, please let us know. TalkingOtter@gmail.com.
No, the women's wrestler, I was making a joke. That's Carmella. Not Carmelo.
I actually, my notes say Carmella, so it could have been Carmella.
No, it's Carmelo Anthony, I want to say. We don't do our research for the show. We do our research for the wrestling. I knew exactly, I could tell you, May 13th, Bound by Honor, West Palm Beach, Florida, is when the King Mo situation happened. Who Carmelo Anthony is? No clue.
Okay, I have another research question for you, though. This is a Jay Lethal one. Do you know when Jay Lethal debuted for ROH?
Ooh, not off the top of my head, no.
Okay, that's totally fair. I did look this up beforehand just because I had sensed that you might have some stats. So Jay Lethal debuted for ROH January 11th, 2003.
Wow, 15 years.
Yep, and when he did...
15 and a half.
When he debuted as Hydro.
Oh.
Yes, until he was...
And he had water powers.
Or something along those lines, until Samoa Joe took him under his wing and got him to change his name.
Oh, good. So we owe Joe the thanks that we're not sitting here for half an hour talking about new ROH world champion, Hydro.
Hydro is such an early 2000s wrestler name, too. Jay Lethal really should be happy that he changed it.
You don't remember his time in the tag team with Oxygen? No, sorry. No, Oxygen is... Damn it, I bungled my own joke. Oxygen is two parts hydrogen, one part... Water. Yes, that is my joke. Water is two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen, right?
Okay.
H2O. So that was supposed to be my point, is that... there. Whatever. Moving on. I don't know what I was going for there. Something. I'll cut all this out of the show, director. Moving on, we had one other match on this week's television. Kenny King versus Jonathan Gresham. Good match. It's your Jonathan Gresham match. So lots of mat work, lots of waist locks, wrist locks, arm holds. I had a fun segment where they were locked up in a small package and they were just rolling around the ring for a good 20 seconds. Trying to be the one to end up on top with the other guy's shoulders on the mat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another fun little match that reminded us of how good Jonathan Gresham is. And I think what stands out for me specifically about Gresham is just nobody else in ROH wrestles like this. Other people do submission moves and have like submission finishers and stuff, but his style is so unique.
Yeah, it really is. He's really fun to watch in matches against other ROH talent for that exact reason. And so when we get matches like this, where we get that like fun, like roll around spot where they're like continually like going for those counts and, you know, they're rolling the other guy over and over, that segues into like a springboard moonsault from Jonathan Gresham onto Kenny. And that works so well. Just that whole sequence ends up feeling really seamless because the styles work just are very compatible.
Yeah, I mean, and beyond that, I probably don't have much else to say about this match because it was a good match. It was fun to see these guys. It's not really leading anywhere. Kenny picks up the odd win here or there, but where he is right now, I don't know. Now that he's not the champion anymore, now that he lost to Austin Aries, I don't know what's happening with Kenny. And Gresham, this is kind of his designated role. Every 3 to 4 weeks, he shows up on TV, has a good match, loses, and then goes away again. And 3 to 4 weeks from now, maybe he'll show up and lose to Shane Taylor or Josh Woods.
That's no. My guess.
Yeah, because one of those guys has to look. Those guys need to be built up in their feud, and Gresham just. He's just not in that position right now.
You know, I can understand that they do that to him with Shane Taylor because they're, you know, trying to get Shane Taylor over in one way or another. But if they have a match with Jonathan Gresham and Josh Woods and Jonathan Gresham loses, that's a massive squandering of Jonathan Gresham. Jonathan Gresham could use a big win. Like, we just pointed out the fact that he's working out a style that nobody else in ROH is working. He's doing it really well. He's very compatible with a lot of different opponent styles. He's done great matches with... This is a good match with Kenny King. He did some great work with Jay Lethal. Like, why not invest a little bit more in Jonathan Gresham? Like, he is a mid-carder, but he doesn't have to be always the guy who takes that pin.
I know, but it's the age-old question of if not him, then who?
Yeah.
If you want Gresham to win a match, who's he going to win over?
I was kind of
hoping.
Yes. Well, exactly, right?
Yeah, there's not too many other guys. And yeah, it's just Gresham, I don't know, Gresham would benefit from having some sort of story, even if it's just like a little mini feud with somebody else, or hey, why not pick somebody else who's a little bit directionless right now and just book a best of seven series, just straight out. Like, not, hey, this is a good match, we should have another, but just say, we're doing a best of seven series, Jonathan Gresham versus, I don't know, nobody comes to mind for me immediately. But find someone.
Yeah.
And set it up. And then they have a little bit of a purpose for the foreseeable future. And it's a chance for both guys to get some exposure and really show what they can do.
Sure. Or, you know, kill two birds with one stone, make Emily happy, and reunite Search and Destroy so that I can see all three guys that I enjoy on ROH television again.
Yes, and I'm still... I made this vow on our last podcast that every episode on this podcast, I'm just going to ask, hey, whatever happened to Coast to Coast?
Great question.
And that's going to be my recurring thing because I like them, and management seemed to like them for a couple months there. They were picking up a lot of victories, and then they vanished. And I don't know if one of them is injured, great. Maybe one of our listeners can like write in and let us know. The reason they're not on TV is because Shaheem Ali has a knee thing, but they'll be back in like a month or two, hopefully. Then great. I fully respect that explanation, and I'm grateful for it. But I just, if it's not that, I don't know what happened to them. It seems weird.
Have you, listeners, seen Coast to Coast out there? Send all Coast to Coast sightings and information.
Have you seen them coasting around?
Are they on one coast or another coast?
From the Atlantic to the Pacific.
Perhaps traveling back.
Everywhere in between. That's the problem. All these shows lately have been landlocked.
Oh, no. See,
we got to wait until they're doing another show on like a beachside resort. Then they'll resurface.
Yeah. See, you can't be somewhere in the Midwest. It can't be landlocked. It's got to be on one coast to the other. They are coast to coast. It's in the name.
Yes. Either. Isn't New York on the coast, though?
Ish.
I don't know. We're poking holes in our own theories here.
No, they're coast to coast.
All right. So that was this week's TV. Next week on television, stacked show. Cody and Teton. If that is as good as Taven and Guerrero, then we're in for a treat. Cheeseburger versus Bully Ray in a no disqualification, no countout match. As per Cheeseburger's request, Emily, is he mad?
Well, maybe, but really... So, okay, so it's no DQ and it's no count out. So
Bully can just kick him between the legs and the match continues.
Yes. Or what? Like, so how does this match end?
I guess it ends with Bully Ray getting the pin because... Yeah, it's Cheeseburger asked for the no DQ, no count out because the last two times they faced each other, Bully Ray got himself purposely counted out and got himself purposely disqualified. So... I guess Cheeseburger is like, now, you know, you can't run away. I have to beat you fair and square with the show tape palm strike. But in actuality, I think Bully's just going to, you know, we just, Friday night at Best in the World, Cheeseburger ran out to try to make the save for flipping Eli Isom, and Bully literally just kicked him once, powerbombed him, and he was dead.
Yeah.
So, don't get too excited for this match, folks, because it doesn't look like it's going to go longer than 10 seconds.
I mean, it could end with, like, Cheeseburger being legitimately murdered, which would be an interesting turn of events.
Yeah, we just never see him again. Remember that guy? Whatever happened to him?
Oh, he was murdered.
I don't know. Or maybe, you know, maybe Burger is smarter than we're giving him credit for. Maybe the no DQ is set up so that he can get some talent. He can get some friends. You can get Eli Isom and Flip Gordon to come out, and they can just gang murder Bully Ray instead.
Yeah, maybe they'll have pulled their cash and they'll have hired Shane Taylor to do the work for them.
Yeah, or some. There's so many options. You gotta imagine that most of the locker room doesn't like Bully Ray, so it should be pretty easy to find people who want to beat him up.
Okay,
I'd imagine.
So here's what happens: every single guy on the roster. Also, every woman on the roster, everyone comes out and they just like line up to take shots at Bully Ray.
Sure. That's half the show.
That's half the show.
It's, it's, It's an unannounced gauntlet match. An unofficial gauntlet match. Bully Ray versus everyone.
And look, if you thought Dalton Castle had a bit, like had a lot to handle with fighting like five guys within one night, Bully Ray's going to have to fight like 20 people.
And the camera's pan. We just see a single file line from ringside right up the ramp. And the camera pans down the line. And we see cameramen there. We see people from catering. We see a couple of bears. Yeah. Good stuff. So that's next week as well. And also a Women of Honor tag match. They didn't say who's in that match, but, you know, there's only like four or five women in the division, so all of them.
Yeah.
Maybe Sumi Sakai and Tennille Dashwood versus Kelly Klein and Karen Q. That's my guess.
All right.
If it's not that, then I don't know who.
Yeah,
maybe Deonna Purrazzo in her last appearance. I don't think we're going to see Deonna again in ROH, actually.
I think that this was probably leading up to when I'm remembering when this was like very, very early June when this was taped. So I think that they might have made that announcement by then.
Okay. Yeah, and it's more fitting for her final match to be against Kelly Klein and to put over Kelly on the way out. That's a better bookmark to her time in Women of Honor, I feel.
Yeah, true. Despite how disappointing that match ended up being, just on a general standpoint, it's better for her to end there.
Yes. So that's next week. We'll be back. We'll be looking at all of that, maybe some more six-man gauntlet stuff. If we're lucky, if we're good boys and girls, they'll reward us with some more fun vignettes and backstage segments on that front. And that's about it, I guess, for the show. You can send us your emails to talkinghonor@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at talkinghonor.
I'm on Twitter at forkedpgh, FORKEDPGH.
There you go. And Emily, here's one last fun little stat for you before we head out tonight.
Okay.
This was your 11th episode of Talking Honor.
What?
And my previous co-host, Lilla Bradbury, only recorded 10 episodes with me. So you are now the reigning and defending Talking Honor podcast co-host. You got the title in the record books.
Oh my God, and the title's right here. That's amazing. When did that get here?
There you go. You're officially the new Woman of Honor.
Wow. I'm just, I don't know what to say aside from I think that the heat is getting to both of us.
Yes. Yeah. All right. We're done. Folks, when we tune in next week, hopefully it'll be winter again, because if not, God help us.
Goodbye.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.